Spring into deals at Lowe's. Shop select 1.5-gallon annuals hanging baskets, 2 for $15, for the perfect addition to Mom's garden. Plus, get 3 free bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil when you buy 3. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/6, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
You know, we obviously talk about ghosts on this show, but do ghosts ever talk about us amongst themselves? On a recent EPP bonus episode titled Dead or Alive, we hear the story of spirits who gather in a little boy's room and seem to discuss the family and the home they inhabit.
You won't forget this one.
It's a one-of-a-kind ghost story, and you're only going to hear it in our EPP bonus section. Sign up to be an EPP. It's only $5 a month. You keep the wind and the sails of the show. You keep it afloat. You keep it on the air with all the free episodes, and you get access to more than 50 bonus episodes, exclusive video content, and so much more. Please sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com, and let's keep Real Ghost Stories Online on the air.
Welcome to Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hello.
And how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm considering becoming an exorcist in the Philippines.
Why is that?
There's a shortage.
Oh, really?
There's a shortage of exorcists in the Philippines in case anyone has been sitting there on Monster looking for a job. They apparently are now hiring.
Okay.
It's just, I thought it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of job openings there. They say that they conduct about 40 exorcisms a day, and there's just not enough exorcists in their diocese to go around.
Wow.
Now, I thought it was interesting because we do get a lot of stories from that area,
yeah,
of the world, and it's always really creepy, dark shit,
mm-hmm,
that we seem to be hearing coming out of there. So I just kind of made the correlation of, well, wow, this is interesting. Is there, and they're saying there's an increase, like, from what they had, like, in the beginning part of the century.
Okay.
Of, it was, like, maybe 10 a day, and now it's up to 40 a day.
Now the beginning part of the 2000s?
Yeah.
Okay.
Beginning part of the 2000s.
Wow.
So roughly, you know, 15 years. We're 2015 now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a lot of increase.
It does seem to be quite a bit of an increase. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know why or what. Is it a case of, is there more stuff going on now? Or is it a case of there's, you know, just more people are realizing that this is what it is or what they think it is because other people are doing it. So then there's more, you know, requests for it, so to speak.
Yeah. I'm wondering if it's more that people are feeling like paranormal things are talked about a lot more now and that they're able, yeah, to come forward.
It's like it's more of an acceptable topic,
yeah,
if you will, or they'll be taken more seriously than they were in the past. So I don't know. I just thought it was a little interesting tidbit of news to put out there. I wonder what would happen if you did, if you went to like monster.com and put that job listing out there.
That would be funny.
Just seeing what resumes you got in. We should do that. We should just post the job and then see what sort of resumes we get.
Mm-hmm.
Just out of morbid curiosity, and then require also with one paragraph why you believe you are qualified to be an exorcist.
See, I think you'd have people just apply but not write anything.
Well, you get that no matter what you do. That's why those job search engines, employers hate them. Because there's so much weeding that has to be done. Just everybody needs a job. Click, 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 with no real thought being put into the job that's being applied for.
Yeah.
Now, some people do, and those are the ones that stand out. But there's always an influx of just apply, apply, apply.
We should do that and then call back and do phone interviews. That would be great.
Oh, that would be wrong, but very entertaining.
Yeah.
All at the same time. So, yeah, and that would be interesting. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. We would love to hear it. Of course, you can also write it on the website at realghoststoriesonline.com. So there are plenty of ways for you to get in touch with us to share your real ghost story. And we will kick off the show today with a letter, and this comes into us from Amanda. And I have to ask, this letter here, is this whole document her one letter, or is there more than one letter on this document here?
No, that is half of what she sent us.
Oh, wow.
So we may have to do a follow-up on the second half of her letter, but for time allotment, this is what we have.
Okay, very good. All right. I was just, I think I may have perused this letter at one point when you were sick.
Yes,
or not when you were
you
sick,
did.
When you were visiting your family. And I think I didn't go to it because it was so long.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to let Jenny go through this and decide how she wants to use it because it looked pretty good. So
exactly.
I'm excited about it. Okay, here we go. All right. Amanda says, hi there. Love your show. Keep up the good work. My name is Amanda, and I am a paranormal investigator. I'd like to share the story of how I became interested in the paranormal. In the late 90s, my mother and stepfather had decided to purchase their first home together. I was in high school, and my younger brother was 6 or 7 at the time. After looking at several new homes on a whim, my mother decided to look at a huge Victorian in the neighboring town of Monroe City, Missouri. She was in no way interested in the sprawling old money pit beforehand, but as soon as she walked through the door, she had to have it. My mother hadn't even seen the rest of the house. She claimed it just felt right, and this was where she was supposed to be. So my family moved in. The house was built in 1880, something by a prominent doctor who had moved to Missouri from out east. To be honest, it's been so long I can't remember where. He had his office in the house and what a house it was. It was absolutely beautiful, with 4 fireplaces, 5 bedrooms, servants' quarters, original hardwood floors and pocket doors. I love the house. The activity started almost right away. The dishwasher would turn itself on and lights would turn on and off. There were several nights that I'd be sitting outside with my friends and all of a sudden every light in the house would turn on, which is impossible. No one could run from room to room that fast. Then there was the banging. Most every night, extremely late, something would come stomping through the upstairs foyer, go to the bedroom doors, one by one, pound on them like a fist. There was never anyone there. It actually got to the point where we didn't even get up to look anymore. After 2 or 3 months, those activities pretty much quit. Thing was, we could go weeks without anything strange happening, then it would start up almost constantly, then die back down. It's like it was on some kind of cycle. This sounds crazy, but it was like the house had moods. Sometimes it would feel sunny and welcoming when suddenly it would be dark and feel oppressive, like the air was almost too thick to breathe. My mother had a friend, I'll call her Amy, who'd come to visit and bring her 2 young boys. It never failed. As soon as she would come over, the activity would start full force. Something in the house did not like her. Amy swore something would follow her home. Once, as she turned the block to pull up to the house, her van began making a terrible noise. On closer inspection, it looked like one of the belts had been cut. Not frayed, then broken. It was a neat, clean cut. Another time, I was in the van with her, and as soon as she turned that same corner, the van side window fell out and shattered on the street. It was like someone lifted it up and dropped it. Your son was playing video games alone in the pink room. That's what we called one of the bedrooms because it was pink. He told us that while he was playing, a lady came into the room and told him that she'd play with him if he didn't tell anyone. He He said her name was Lily. We didn't think much about it at the time, but my mother had become obsessive about learning the history of the house. She even contacted some of the relatives of the original owners. After some back and forth correspondence, they sent her the memoirs of one of the daughters of the family that built the house. In it, the daughter talks about her sister, Elizabeth. They called her Lily, for short. Then there was the time that Amy had come to visit and it had gotten late, so she and her sons decided they'd stay the night. The next morning, we woke up and they were gone. But my mother called and asked what happened. Amy explained that in the night, she'd woken up and had felt an overwhelming feeling of uneasiness and fear. She'd felt she was not welcome in the house. Then she saw the huge shadow of a man in the corner of the room. He was as tall as the ceiling. They were 12 feet tall. We saw the shadow figure several times in that same spot in the pink room while we lived there. So Amy packed up her boys and left in a hurry. Another thing that happened a lot in that house that involved the TV and Super Nintendo was if we were playing it at 10:30 at night, we'd shut off. If you're familiar with Super Nintendo, you know to turn it on, it was a slide-type switch that you pushed or pulled. When my little brother first told me that his Nintendo and TV were turning themselves off, I didn't believe him. Then I saw it. The switch physically turned itself off. The TV did the same thing. We even unplugged them and the TV turned itself back on with no power. I've always believed that someone thought it was bedtime. Once I came home and saw a woman standing on the stairs looking at me. She had long, stringy, blonde hair and wore an off-white nightgown or shift. She was barefoot and looked sickly. I jumped and she was gone. I think this woman was Lily. During my time living in the house, I met my future husband, Michael, and he moved in with us. He didn't believe in the paranormal before, but he definitely does now. Once he was pushed down the stairs, he said it was like someone kicked his feet out from under him. Luckily, he wasn't hurt. At one time, we had plumbing problems in the upstairs bathroom, so we had to use the one downstairs. I woke up in the middle of the night having to go to the bathroom. I nudged Michael and asked him to go with me. I could tell it was one of those oppressive nights. So we got up and headed downstairs. Lights were shining through the floor-to-ceiling windows so we could see all the way well enough. After answering the call of nature, we started to head back upstairs and we both heard fast footsteps coming towards us. Like I said, it was dark, but not so dark that we couldn't see. There wasn't anything there. I looked at him and he looked at me and we both took off towards the stairs. Looking back, I don't know why we didn't turn the lights on. I guess we didn't think about it. As we ran, we could hear the footsteps running right beneath us. Michael grabbed the closed music room door and yanked it open. We ran through and slammed it behind us. Whatever it was, it hit the door behind us with a lot of force. That was the last time we took bathroom breaks in the middle of the night. The spirits in the house could definitely be nasty, but they could have a sense of humor, sometimes at our expense. One night, my stereo woke me up. It was turned up full volume playing, I swear I'm not making this up, Michael Jackson's Thriller. I remember turning it off and yelling, "Ha ha, very funny." It's amazing how you can eventually get used to some of the paranormal stuff that happens regularly. For instance, our things would disappear. Silly things like clothes, toys, or keys. Finally, I had a meltdown when my favorite jeans went missing. I know they'd been in my room, and after tearing the house apart, they were just gone. So I marched to the foyer and yelled and cursed and demanded my pants back immediately. I looked like a madwoman. When I went back to the bedroom, the jeans were lying neatly on my bed. After that, a fit in the foyer usually produced whatever was missing. Another one of their favorite games was Feed the Fish. I kept several betta fish in small glass fish bowls. I'd go to feed them, only to realize they'd been fed minutes before. The fish food would float until it got wet, then sink to the bottom. The food would still be floating, so it would have had to be poured into the bowls just before I walked into the room. It was nice of them to help, but there was always way too much food, and I'd have to clean out all the fish bowls. There was so much varied activity in the house, it was crazy. A couple times when I was home alone or watching my brother, we'd hear a huge crash. It shook the house. Of course, we'd never find anything broken. There were the sleep talkers. Right before you drifted off to sleep, you'd hear a conversation going on right above you. It sounded like a man and a woman, but they talked so low and fast you could never quite catch what they were saying. That happened to me and my mother and various members of the family who were visiting. Then there was the phone phase. My little brother's goal in life at that age was to answer the phone before anybody else could get to it. He thought it was hilarious when he was able to beat me to the phone. Well, the phone would start to ring and he'd answer it. He'd get really confused and tell us someone was calling about a party, but he'd hang it up before an adult got to listen to it. This went on for a couple months, maybe 4 or 5 times a week. One day, I got to the phone first. Here's what I heard. "You have been called by a party on your line. Please hang up and try again." It was a recorded voice of the operator. What that means is someone upstairs or downstairs, depending on which phone we had answered, had called the house number and then hung the phone up. Talk about making your blood run cold. This started searches through the house looking for a living person. The house was so large, it was possible someone else could be in the house and we wouldn't know it. We quickly became experts at searching the house for an intruder. One winter, we had so much snow that part of my parents' bedroom roof caved in. While it was being repaired, my mother slept in my little brother's room. It was really late when Michael and I woke up to a pounding on our bedroom door. I remember how much I dreaded opening it, but I did, and there stood my little brother. All the lights were off, and it was pitch black. My brother never ever went anywhere in the house with the lights off. He was too afraid, and he was crying inconsolably. I took him into my bedroom and tried to calm him down. He kept crying that he couldn't find Mom. She was gone. When I finally got the story out of him, he told me this. He'd woken in the night and sat up. He looked over and Mom wasn't in bed with him. Got up, went to see if she was in the bathroom. She wasn't. He took note that all the lights were on, so she had to be somewhere in the house. He called for her, but no answer. Then he started to cry. When he looked up, he was standing in front of the servants' quarters door. Let me stress, he would never go down there by himself, especially at night. The idea would be insane to my little brother. Even the adults thought twice about going down there alone at night. Anyway, he didn't remember walking there. At this point, he was terrified and suddenly found himself in front of my bedroom door in the dark. I turned the lights on and took him back to his room. My mother was asleep. I woke her up and said that she'd been asleep the whole time. The thing is, the way the bed was positioned and how they were sleeping, my brother would have had to climb over her to get out of bed. He had no history of sleepwalking. I don't know what happened, but I know something did. My poor baby brother was terrified and hysterical. I adopted a stray cat, and he just showed up, and I took him in. We named him Killer. I don't remember why, because that's a ridiculous name for a cat. I came home one day and found Killer dead in the middle of my bedroom floor, his head twisted backwards and touching his back. No one had been in the house all day. I don't know what happened to Killer. We didn't have any problems with any other animals we had while we lived in the house, except our Saint Bernard could apparently phase through walls. A few times we'd see her running down the street. When all the doors in the house were closed, I used to have this nightmare where I'd wake up and look over at my closet door, which would be open about 5 or 6 inches, and I'd see a Catholic nun standing there, smiling evilly at me. I could tell she was dead. Her throat was slit. She was gray, green, bruised color, and horribly bloated. When my mother was researching the history of the house, we found out that Dr. Jones, who built it, had a brother who was a Catholic priest. Could nuns have stayed in the house? The spirits would also mimic us. Sometimes I'd hear my mother, brother, or Michael calling me. They'd never be home at the time. My mother had begun to do odd things. She'd shut all the curtains in the house and didn't want people to see in or come over. She didn't want to leave the house for any reason. And she was terrified of fire. She had dreams of the house burning and honestly believed that she'd lived there before in a past life. Her mannerisms were different. She'd sit straight and fold her in the lap like a proper lady. We convinced her to let us contact a medium to walk through the house. Taj was a friend of a friend who did a little paranormal investigating. This was before it was cool. He came to the house and got the impression of a young girl in the attic. The old woman who looks out the windows, children waiting for their father to come home, and several others, including people chained to the wall in the servants' quarters. He claimed there was a portal right through our formal living room that allowed ghosts to come and go. When he got to the basement, he refused to go down the stairs. Taj says there was something very nasty growling down there. He wanted to cleanse and sage the house. At this point, my mother lost it. She began to panic, saying, "No, they want me here. They have to stay. I need them." It was insane. We calmed her down, and Taj explained the sage would only get rid of anything negative. My mother agreed. Years later, when I ask her about it, she has no memory of freaking out. To hear her tell it, none of it happened, but there were four witnesses that saw the whole thing.
There is so much in that story, it's hard to know where to begin.
Yeah.
But I think the phrase that I liked most was the house seemed to have moods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's kind of interesting. A lot of times you have homes that they feel cheery or they feel really kind of sad or off or creepy.
Sure.
But not one that seems to change like a person.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing to think about, like with a house having a mood. And then it makes you wonder, do the spirits in the house adjust to the other spirit's mood? And then it's kind of like a chain reaction. Like it starts in the paranormal realm and then everyone in the living ends up picking up on it.
I thought maybe it more had to do with the portal.
Okay.
And kind of, okay, something not so dark's coming through. And so the mood feels a little lighter.
Sure.
Something really bad's coming through and it feels more oppressive.
One day you get a good ghost, one day you get a bad ghost. It's like whatever is coming and going is what you're going to be dealing with.
I think so. I think that would explain the mood of the house changing more mm-hmm. than anything. And you probably do have some resident spirits that are going to be stuck there. But I don't think they would cause it to change the feel of the house one way or another back and forth.
What do you make of the mom who didn't want, you know, the house cleansed, who felt very emotionally connected?
I think something latched on to her.
Do you think it's her speaking? Do you think she was, for lack of a better term, like borderline possessed?
Yes, because I don't think she, well, with the way she doesn't remember.
Sure.
You know, that's one sign. But then also the way she changed mannerisms and just physically acted differently.
Mm-hmm.
She was somebody else. I think that's kind of telltale sign there, too.
There's something else mm-hmm. going on with her. So there's more to this story.
There's more to the story, yes.
All right. Like well, part two?
We could do part two tomorrow.
That'd be great.
It's just as long.
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do part two tomorrow.
Okay.
I like the story. I mean, it's one of those where it does go all over the place with a lot of different things,
mm-hmm.
but it was written well, and it, descriptively, you could kind of follow it. It's kind of an account of the house.
Yes.
And so I could follow that one pretty well.
It's kind of, it's conjuring reminiscent.
It is. And then some of the situations tied into each other. So I'm interested. I'm intrigued. I'd love to know more about what happens. Does part two, can you give us any teaser about it? Does it start talking about investigating the house further or is it more accounts of the hauntings?
It's more accounts of her as an adult.
Okay.
And interactions and things that have gone on.
In the house?
I believe in the house, yes.
Interesting. All right. Part two tomorrow. All right. 855-853-4802, our phone number to Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. Of course, press subscribe, whatever platform you listen to us on. That keeps the shows coming to you without you having to search them every single time. We're on lots of platforms these days. iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, TuneIn Radio, Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn Radio.
You said TuneIn twice.
I did twice. I lose track. is basically, if it's a podcast service, we're probably there. And unless it's something really obscure and they haven't gotten our feed. But if it's a podcast service, we're probably there. So check it out. Press subscribe. Helps our show grow. Let's go over to caller in California. Hi.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Jenny. My name is Noel. We are from California, me and my family. And I have a story to share with you that happened not too long ago. Maybe the last 2 years has been happening. My brother got a job over at a dairy, very old dairy, by Los Banos, California. There's a old dairy on Henry Miller Road, and there was a house there that, you know, he moved into, and it's a nice size house. It's very old. It's, you know, I don't 50s, I don't know, 60s, but there was a murder-suicide in that house. The story behind this story is that back in the day, that ranch was a very big ranch, very wealthy people there. And one of the sons of the ranch, of the owner, he got one of the mates pregnant and moved her into that house and, you know, told her that, you know, he was going to be with her, you know, they were going to get married. But that didn't happen. He left her. He left her, and she couldn't take it. She committed suicide along with her baby. She baby was like 2 years old, and she committed suicide in the closet of the house. Now, you know, fast forward, you know, back 2 years ago, my brother moves into this house, and, you know, he's like, hey, man, well, you know, come out here and check out, you know, the house and everything. I'm like, okay. So I go over there, and, you know, I'm helping him move and everything, and it feels dark. Just the environment, you know, felt dark. And I'm like, you need some light in here. Went back the next weekend because, you know, he wanted to throw a barbecue, and everybody was outside. And, you know, I said, come over. So, I go over, and I said, I'm going to use your bathroom real quick. So I go into the house, and as I'm crossing the hallway, I get this chills, like this unbelievable chills down my arms, my arms and my back. I'm like, what the heck? Is there a breeze coming through here or something? It was the hallway, you know? And I made my way to the bathroom, and I heard some noise on the bedroom. I didn't think nothing of it. It was just like something fell over. As I was walking out, back down the hallway to go outside, I feel that sensation again. And it's just, it's heavy. It's like the air is heavy. It weighs on you. You feel it right away, like something is not right. So I go back outside kind of uneasy, and my brother was like, what's gathering? What's wrong? I said, oh, no, nothing, man. I'll talk to you about it later. So, you know, a few hours go by, and he goes, hey, man, what's up? And I said, man, what's going on in your house? He's like, what do you mean? I said, I don't know. I felt something in your house. Something is wrong in your house, man. And I told him what happened to me, and he just stared at me, like blank stare with his eyes just big, you know. And he goes, I saw something. And I said, really? What did you see? And he said, I got up to work. It was about 4:30 in the morning. I got up, you know, everybody's asleep. I got up, I turned on the light on the living room. And as I'm walking my way to the kitchen, I turned the corner on the hallway, and there was this mist, white mist, like fog. And I looked down, and I saw a lady and her kid, and they were sitting on the hallway, and they looked at me. They turned their heads up and they looked at me, and I'm just listening to them like, are you serious? Yeah, I said, how did they look? You know, and he goes, well, they look dead. Like, literally, you could see their expressions of agony, their features, like, corpse-like. They was, like, in between a mirage and a mist, but you could see them. They were sitting there on the hallway. And I said, are you serious, man? Oh, God. And I said, so what are you going to do? And he said, well, you know, I don't know. I said, I haven't told my wife. And, but I think my little boy seen them too. I said, my little nephew, Cruz, he was 5 at the time. Are you serious? He said, yeah. But 3 nights ago, I heard him sobbing in his room. You know, it's just sobbing, and I walk in there, and he's staring at the closet, and he's sobbing like he's about to burst out crying. And I said, what? Oh, and I took him to the room, to my room, to my bedroom, to put him in bed. I'm like, what? That's a serious problem, man. So he got a he went to his boss, and he asked him, you know, what happened in the house, because he's never seen anything like that or experienced anything like that. My brother was very skeptical. I had seen stuff before. I've seen stuff before, but my brother had it, my little brother. And boss told him the story that I opened the story with, what happened in the house. And he said the house hasn't been lived on for, you know, 5-6 years. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, the house was empty. And the boss believed him, and he got a priest over to the house to bless the house. And, you know, it was a big prayer for the souls of these people. Obviously, they're not in a better place. They're still stuck there. Something is can't cross over, and there was a big prayer for them as a blessing of the house. And this was about 8 months ago, and it's been quiet ever since. Once in a while, my brother, because I asked him, I'm just like, I'm very fascinated with you know, things of the unknown, and I asked him about 2 months ago. I said, so, hey, have you seen anything lately? How's it going at the house? And he said, well, I still get the chills going down the hallway, but I haven't seen anything. And my son hasn't seen anything either. I said, that's good. That's good. Well, anyways, that was my story. I hope you enjoyed it. And I have a few others that has happened to me and my family that I would like to share with you in another occasion. And I just recently became an EPP. Love your show. Love you guys. Take care.
Thank you for the story, and thank you for helping support and keep the show on the air by becoming an EPP.
I know that it's a sad situation, but I think it kind of is a comfort to know who the spirits are in the house. You know, it just kind of solidifies that, no, you're not hallucinating.
Mm-hmm.
But to also know that if that happened there, then it's probably just them, and it's probably not going to be anything else that really happens other than occasionally seeing them.
Well, it sounds interesting, like they were able to help them cross over.
Did they help them cross over, or did they just push them out of the house?
I don't know.
Because that's my question. When you come in and you have a priest bless the house like that, mm-hmm. and I'm not saying that it's bad one way or the other, but does it really encourage the spirits to cross, or does it just encourage them to move along?
Then yeah, I wonder about how many times, you know, people think they're doing a crossing over thing, mm-hmm. and they're not. They're just relocating, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's out of sight, out of mind, but they're still somewhere else. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I don't know if just because you have a priest come in, if that helps them cross over, or if it just basically puts up a barrier saying messing with these people or being seen
right.
by these people. So I don't know the answer to that, but it sounds like hopefully, I mean, because there's kids involved there, that this will be calm now for them.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it's one thing and you're an adult, still freaky as hell, but this is happening to you when you're a kid, that could have some more repercussions.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if I were in the same situation, I would have somebody come in and bless the house too. But that's always my lingering question is.
Sure.
Hopefully they're crossing over, but are they just moving on to somebody else's house? And that's where you get the hauntings that
mm-hmm.
the house has never been haunted. Then all of a sudden, you know.
Well, the neighbors happen to have been.
Yeah.
And they booted them out.
Yeah.
So guess who's coming to dinner?
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting, interesting call. Thank you. And we would love to hear more of your calls, too. So feel free to give us a buzz back. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Hi.
Yeah, hello. Real Ghost Stories here. This is Brendan. I said I'd call, and I'm going to tell you guys some of my experience. It may sound a little crazy. It may sound a little brutal, but it's my life. I am now with the Lord. Yes, I am full-blooded Native American. And I am from Indian Reservation in Arizona. And if it's good enough for my grandmother to accept the Lord Jesus Christ in her life, and she could barely speak English, it's good enough for me too. But you have to realize the life that I've lived and the twisted turns it's taken. And this is why I've been haunted and plagued by demons and things of this sort, you know? And, you know, as a 16-year-old kid, I got sentenced to 30 years in prison. And they sent me to a place for juveniles that were sentenced as adults. And I was 125 pounds back then, just a little bitty guy. I mean, I'm a big man now, you know, like 315, 320 pounds. And, but, you know, prison makes monsters, you know. It'll take a little tiny skinny guy and it'll turn him into a big old huge Hulk, which is basically what I am. But anyway, after getting sentenced to all that time and the courts deeming I was helpless and beyond hope, I decided to go ahead and become that monster. And I, at that point, had felt that God had turned his back on me. And I wasn't the only one. In that prison for juvie sentenced as adults, we all felt God had turned his back on us, and we were all against God, and a lot of people in there were Satanists, and I wasn't as much of a Satanist as those guys were, but I became one with my satanic Bible and myself, and I got down on my hands and knees, and I accepted Satan as my ruler, my king, you know, and from there, I basically prayed for everything violent you can imagine, you know. And unlike most Satanists who just want to just pray to hurt people or whatever, I was different than that. I wanted to be tough and I wanted to be a badass. And so I prayed for violence to be inflicted on me. I prayed to get beaten. I prayed to have the guards beat me. I prayed for bloodshed, for me to get beaten, you know. And everything that I prayed for, it became a reality. And when I was 18, I was so demon infested that I was actually got to the point where I was scared to sleep at night because the demons would literally beat me in my sleep and I'd wake up getting beaten, you know, and I could see these demons hovering above my bunk beating me. And they look just like that movie in that Ghost. You remember those dark black blobs at the end of the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze? That's what these guys look like. And these were the ones that were inflicting violence on me, and I was seeing stars. I was getting beaten so bad. I lived in a dormitory prison, and I remember the guy that was in the bunk right next to me. He was an old convict, been down like 30-plus years, and I snapped out of it, you know, because these demons were beating the living heck out of me. And as soon as I'd snap and wake up and move, it would stop instantaneously. But until then, it was just brutal. It was a brutal, violent beating. And he looked at me totally puzzled as heck, and he says, "Hey, youngster, hey, young chief." I said, "Yeah." He says, "Hey, man." He said, "That was weird. You were getting beaten. I was watching you get punched, but I couldn't see nothing punching you. I could see your face moving as you were getting punched real hard, and your face and your head and your neck, and you were just getting punched like crazy, but there wasn't nothing there, man." And I said, "Yeah, it's them demons, you know, they attack me in my sleep, you know, and it's been like that, you know, and I don't like going to sleep, you know, but nonetheless, out of exhaustion, I would always fall asleep." Well, these demonic experiences followed me, and when I wound up in Supermax as a very young man, you know, and back then the Supermax in Arizona prison was only 150 out of 20,000 prisoners make it to Supermax. I made it there at the age of, what was it? I believe it was 19 or so. But there I am in Supermax, and I noticed after I'd been locked down some years because of my behavior, my violent behavior, I would see things flying in my cell. I'd see my books fly across the cell. I'd see pens fly across my cell, and there's no one in that cell but me and Supermax. Finally, one day I was having a conversation with this hardcore convict down on the tier, and he was a black dude, and I said, "Hey, man, you got stuff that flies across your cell?" And he goes, "Heck yeah, I do, chief." I said, "I'm not the only one." And then we all started talking on the tier, and everyone says, "Oh yeah, man, my coffee cup flies across my cell all the time, you know." And we're all, "Man, it's weird how we all got experiences like this, you know, where books fly and things almost hit us in the head and all that, and we're the only ones in our cell, you know." And we're yelling out on the tier to each other real loud, you know. And finally, the older convict, man, he turns around and he says, "Hey, chief, check this out. Think about where we're at, man." I said, "Well, we're in Supermax. We're the Incorrigibles, man." He says, "That's right." And he says, "A majority of men in here are violent. A majority of men in here are murderers. They've killed either in the joint or they've killed down on the street. And we inflict violence on the guards. We inflict violence on our fellow convicts. Now, if you're a demon from hell, or if you're a demon, where else would you want to be?" And I said, "I'd want to be here in Supermax, where all the hatred, all the chaos, and all the violence is right here. The guards hate us. We hate the guards. The guards beat us. You know," and hardcore convicts respond in kind, you know, and it's a world of hatred, and we all hate each other due to either racial conflicts, or we hate each other on an individual conflict. It's nothing but we're drenched in hate. And he says, "You're damn right." He says, "You're right. That's why demons are in Supermax." Well, as my time went on in Supermax, I come to find out, as I talked to other hardcore convicts, there was one demon that was really, it was in Supermax all the time, but I talked to several top gang members, you know, and I'm just a young pup, you know, and I'm not all that old, and I'm not high up in no gang or nothing like that. I'm to be honest with you, because I thought I was crazy, but when you're in Supermax, I mean, you find out that, you know, what you thought was violent and crazy is really nothing. And these guys are way out of your league. I mean, they're totally violent. I can honestly tell you that if a serial killer was in Supermax, the hardcore convicts would be desperately trying to get to that serial killer to assault that serial killer and kill him, you know? But as I started talking to these other hardcore gangsters, man, I'm sitting there talking to them, and they started telling me stories about the demon that rapes them in their sleep. And I said, "Yeah, that's that guy Succubus, and that's the demon that rapes men in their sleep." So a lot of hardcore convicts, they get raped in their sleep, you know? That's, you know, Satan is there, you know, it's a macho man's world, and Satan wants to corrupt that world, and just, he's a total degenerate, and he is totally manifested in a world of hatred, you know. Well, fast forward years later, I get sent to Utah prison, and I'm finishing my rest of my 5 years there because I got my time cut, you know, and I wound up only doing 16 years on my sentence out of a total of what was originally 30, but it turned out to be a 33-year sentence. I got 17 years taken off my sentence, you know. And I'm in Utah, and I'm in that one cell block where they, that movie, The Executioner song, you know, where they executed that first convict by a firing squad. And I'm in that cell block, and I was sitting there talking to all these young Chicano gangbangers from Salt Lake. We're all getting ready to go to the to Draper or Gunnison, Utah, and we started talking about demons and ghosts and all that. And even though these guys were gangsters and gangbangers, they were all very family-oriented, if you can find that hard to believe. But they also, you know, they knew about the church, and they you know, because they're all Catholics, and they just went wrong in their life, and they know it. But all of a sudden, we started talking, and I said, well, what would happen if a can were to move and just go all the way down the hallway? No sooner I said that, that can, a soda can, an empty soda can, rolled all the way right in front of our cell block area, passed in front of all our cells, and it rolled all the way for like 150 feet all by itself at about 2 o'clock in the morning. And all the Chicano gangsters got scared and started praying, you know. And at the time, I guess I just kind of laughed it off and just thought it was funny, you know. But those are the kind of things that go on in those kind of places. And, you know, it was a wicked world. And I'm now with the Lord, you know. I mean, I've come full circle, you know, and it's, the Lord isn't the one to blame. It's me and the choices that I made in my life. And that is why, you know, I've come full circle. I've matured out of all the madness and the chaos and the violence and all that. And I don't view the world with hatred anymore, you know, and it's the Lord that made me free, you know. And out of all those years I spent in prison, I spent 9, almost 10 years in Supermax, and I spent 7 years in Max. And, you know, I mean, I'm a free man now, but I have a ton of stories, because before prison, I grew up in foster homes from 4 to 15. So I was totally state raised for the first 32 years of my life. I got out when I was 32. From the age of 4 to 15, foster homes, prison from 16 to 32. And so all I knew was just, you know, that's all I knew, just being state raised. But in foster homes, I went through a lot of one house in particular that I was in, one foster home. I was haunted by a poltergeist for almost 4 years. And, well, that's all I'm going to say for now, you know. And that's just a little bit of my life. And I'll call you guys later. Bye.
Thank you for calling and sharing your story. It's obviously very good to hear that you've gotten your life turned around and are on a very good path now. But my goodness, we always, you hear stories, especially like on the TV shows, ghost shows, where they're going to the abandoned prison and it's really haunted. I mean, you, a lot of times you don't really think about, okay, well, what about when the prison is not abandoned or inactive? You know, is stuff going on in it while it is a prison? And I think that answers that question pretty well.
I think so. And I would say that's probably the case even when you aren't asking for the things he was asking for in the beginning, where he talked about wanting to go down that dark path.
Sure.
I would imagine that you still find quite a bit that goes on. Wasn't it Al Capone that he was terrified of his cell, not just from being in it, but there was something about his cell was haunted, and he swore there's somebody in there, and they said he used to yell that there's somebody in here with me.
I don't know.
I will look that up real fast.
Okay. I mean, I know that there's stories like that. I don't know specifically about that one, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about, you know, just exactly what he was saying. If you were a demon and you wanted to go to the place where you can fester and just feed on hate and negative energy, what better place is there than going to a super max prison? That just makes total sense. Did you find anything?
Yeah, that was Al Capone.
Okay. That answers that.
Yeah, you can Google it and find all kinds of information.
Very interesting. Well, thank you for calling in and sharing that story with us. I hope that if you were able to give us another buzz sometime and share more of your experiences, we'd love to hear them. And thanks for listening. Number is 855-853-4802 here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. We would love to hear it. Of course, you can also write it on the website, Real Ghost Stories Online. So there's lots of ways for you to call in your story, share it with us, and get it on the air. We'd greatly, greatly appreciate that. And of course, if you want some more ghost stories, well, sign up to become an EPP. That's an extra podcast person. Our EPPs are what keeps our show on the air as far as the finances of it, the costs of the audio hosting, bandwidth, all that fun stuff. It's only $5 a month, and you get access to our archive of more than 50 bonus episodes, exclusive video content, and more. Some of our best stories on those EPP episodes, by the way. So go ahead, sign up, and start downloading them. You get access to all of it right when you sign up. You head to realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP, and we thank you in advance for doing that and helping to keep the show going. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.